and welcome to Saturday Morning Cartoons, the weekly podcast that revisits, reviews, and ridicules some of the world's weirdest animated series. Coming to you from deep within the magic forest, I'll be your host, David the Human. Joining me as always, and I don't know if you know this, listeners, but he turns to stone in direct sunlight, it's Sean Paul Ellis. How are you today,
sir? It's true. David, I'm doing well. How about you?
Doing good, buddy. I'm glad to see you out in the night when you're not stone. Much livelier.
It's the only time I can exist.
Yeah, it's okay. And wait, what's this? Our special guest emerges from the woodland mists. Why, it's the lovely forest nymph, Allison Keene. How are you tonight, Miss Keene?
Hello. Doing very
well.
For those who don't know, Miss Keene certainly knows her TV shows. She's a television critic for both Hollywood Reporter and Collider.com, just to name a few. Oh, and in a special bit of SMC trivia, she also happens to be the composer behind the intro music you hear each and every week on this very show. So here's your props. I think we've mentioned it once before.
Wonderful, wonderful job, and we are delighted to have her.
Each and every week.
Thank you very much.
Any other special talents you'd like to share with the listeners? Anywhere they can find your work?
Ooh. These are like bad, getting to know you at a job question.
I pulled that question out of a red solo cup as an icebreaker.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Are you still podcasting? Are you still,
If you were trapped in the bottom of a blender.
What's this television thing? Is it going to exist for much longer?
I don't know. I think it might be a flash in the pan.
That is actually a solid question for a future episode, I think. Because as far as nostalgia goes, these cartoons are going. I don't know, man. Television. Hey, guess what was on television?
Speaking of cartoons, what did we watch?
30 years ago, we watched cartoons. Oh, boy.
Why am I the one steering this show?
Sean is the voice of reason on this show. Oh, boy.
That's when we've gone awry.
Yeah, that's going to actually dwindle probably as the show goes on. Because, Sean, if I'm not mistaken, what libation are you enjoying tonight that you'd like to share with the listeners out there?
Oh, my gosh. Hey, listeners, if you are a 30-something and you are enjoying a beverage, I am enjoying, it's by Off Color Brewing, and I'm enjoying something that is called Troublesome.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why we've decided that 30-something is the new drinking age on this show. We've just decided that you must be 30-something to appreciate 80s cartoons and drink while listening to this show. So that's
fine.
We're very conservative here. Very conservative. Listeners, unfortunately, I am literally drinking a glass of water. You can find it at your local tap. But the flu is going around, so stay healthy, stay hydrated. A little SMC tip. Miss Keene, I don't know if you're drinking anything interesting tonight. I'm going to guess water.
You're right.
Yeah. See, I know you too well. I know you too well.
I'm just taking a leaf out of the book of the gnomes. You know, I think that they would be drinking water. What? Although, I could be mistaken. I think that David gets up to some other
He smokes a fair amount, so I'm going to guess that he also drinks some, like, acorn wine or something. I don't know what he's got going on.
Yeah, I mean, watching the episodes... So I watched the first three episodes, and then I watched the final episode.
Right.
And final episode, I think they get a little bit hammered towards the very end of it.
Oh, that's correct. They do. I don't remember what they were drinking though.
No, they never say either. I mean, they look like they are indulging to the point of
inebriation.
Excess, which, I mean, given the circumstances that were happening, like, I get it.
Yeah, that's a great tease for our listeners.
They started toasting, you know, like, toast that made sense, and then they just got sloppier and sloppier, and then they were toasting to just anything that they saw around them. Like, it just didn't even matter anymore. It was just like, fuck it, you know? Let's just keep drinking.
and that was the fun, is because, I mean, like, you had two gnomes, you had David and you had Casper, and then you had one female gnome, Lisa, and I felt like David was kind of like leading the charge. Casper was like, "Yeah, like I'll get in on this." And then like maybe halfway through, Lisa was like, "Oh no, I can have an opinion about this. Like I can say stuff, and I can get really into it." And then she went balls to the wall. Good for you, girl.
She got white girl drunk, is what happened.
Yeah. She got white girl drunk. Well, now that you know how the show ends with white girl drunk, let's talk a little bit about how it begins. I'm going to turn it back over to Sean. He's going to give you a little bit of history, as well as the title of the show we're actually talking about.
Oh, my gosh. So we clearly watched David the Gnome, or the world of David the Gnome. This was a Spanish animated television series. It was based on the children's book, The Secret Book of Gnomes, that was by a Dutch author, which I'm going to butcher his name, Will Huygen.
Sounds good.
And illustrated by Ryan Porlibit.
Nailed it.
Perfect. I speak
perfect Dutch
languages. So it was originally created for a Spanish audience, where it went under the title David El Gnomo.
I love that so much.
And it retains the sense of the same look and feel that the book, The Secret Book of Gnomes, had. There were 26 episodes. And, I mean, the way that they ended this, I mean, they lend themselves well to a second season, you know, or a spinoff, which there was, which is called The Wisdom of the Gnomes.
And we'll talk about that when we talk about the finale of the first series, too. Yeah.
This show had really two dynamite voice actors that were in it. It was Tom Bosley, who was probably best known for being on the sitcom Happy Days. He played Howard Cunningham, Richie Cunningham's dad, as well as also Christopher Plummer. I mean, he was Captain Von Trapp. Like, how do you escape from that? And Christopher Plummer narrated the intro for a majority of the episodes. Just very distinct voice. If you don't know who Christopher Plummer is, like, just Google search him. You'll look at him and be like, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Like,
you already know who he is. You just might not know it. Yeah.
Yeah. So this, like I said, 26 episodes. It aired in the U.S. in 1987 on Nickelodeon. I don't know. Allison, I believe you watched this when you were younger.
I did, yes.
And I know that I watched this. David, did you happen to catch this when it was on?
Yeah, like I told listeners last week, I was definitely I was really not named after David the Gnome. That would have been weird, especially since I was already 4 years old when this came out. But no, I loved just the idea that there was like a show that shared my name that wasn't Davy Crockett, and then was just like this cool magical world. And it wasn't until we went back and watched these first couple of episodes that I realized how much they were trying to like separate themselves, the world of the gnomes, from the world of like man. And the first episode, which we'll talk about in a little bit, it does this really just bold and obvious and hit you over the head sequence where it's just like, this is the magical world of the gnomes, and this is the terrible city dwellers over here, and never the twain shall meet.
It was really heavy-handed.
Super heavy-handed. I did not think it was that bad.
I was not prepared for how heavy-handed this was going to be.
No, it definitely was not.
I walked away with a sense of guilt that I was not prepared to get from a cartoon.
Well, let's actually turn this back over to Allison, and she will tell us more or less in her own words what the show was really about, though, and also with some interesting trivia from the show as well.
Yes.
Well, I wanted to read out what the show has at the very beginning of each episode, and it's a couple paragraphs that sort of sets the show up, and it goes across the screen so fast that it's impossible for any 30-something to read it, much less a child.
Especially a drunk 30-something.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that the blur is just that much worse. Yeah. Anyway, in their own words, it says, "No one is better because he is bigger. The series finds its inspiration in nature itself, which is the series' true protagonist." And I want to pause here and note the use of the word protagonist in a children's show, to not only because it's a huge word, but also that they're like assuming that the child may have otherwise, you know, had other ideas about who the protagonist is. It's not actually David the Gnome. It is indeed nature itself. That's very esoteric for, you know, a children's series.
Yeah, I'll say this. Anyway. A number of stumbling blocks here for the four-year-old watching this program. One, the ability to read English that quickly, because these two paragraphs, she's only like a quarter of the way through. These fly through Star Wars style, but at like hyperspeed. Like, it's gone in 3 seconds while the theme song is going on. Second stumbling block, the word protagonist. So by the time you look it up in a dictionary, because this was before the internet, the show's over. So, yeah, good luck, kids. Smart enough.
I think 7-year-old me was like, too long didn't read.
Yeah, definitely.
Bring on the gnomes.
Bring on the trolls.
Yeah. Bring on the trolls.
And you had a false sense of the show then, because you didn't know that nature itself was the series' true protagonist.
Had no idea. They tried to subliminally, like, slip that in there. Had no idea. No clue.
To continue, the names, characters, and situations that appear in the following stories have been extracted from the secret book of the gnomes, being true and factual accounts. Many centuries have passed before we humans have been able to have access to the most complete information that exists about the world of the gnomes. The end.
Well done. Well done. And as I mentioned earlier, that that paragraph or two just scrolls super quickly over the theme song, which is, of course, what we'll talk about next, because we love intros and theme songs from these 80s shows here on Saturday Morning Cartoons. Sean Paul Ellis, in his Saturday Morning Cartoon dissertation, still has an ongoing thesis, so I will now turn it back over to him to see how David the Gnome's theme and lyrics fold into his theory there. What do you think?
Honestly, if I get a doctorate in this for this thesis, it's just a mic drop for cartoons everywhere. I'm excited.
You have an honorary doctorate from Greendale Community College.
Please. So I thought that this theme song. So let's go through the theme song. Yeah. And instead of singing it, I'm just gonna dramatically read it. So this is the theme song of the world of David the Gnome. Look around you. There are many things to see that some would say could never be. These things I know. It's true, and I will tell you so. They are there to see if you believe. Trolls and wizards and fairy kings, birds that talk and fish that sing. And if your heart is true, then you will find them too. In every wish and dream and happy home, you will find a kingdom of the gnomes.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
And I will say this, it sounds very much like a graduation speech, up until the trolls and the wizards part. That would probably be a cue that something's not quite right. But up until...
It's like the third manifesto, you know? It's like trolls and wizards and fairy kings. And so, like, if your heart is true, you will find them too. But you know, if not, then you're lost.
Sorry.
I really wonder, like, if I would watch this with I guess, maybe, like, a better perspective or you know, just some better idea of what was going on, if I would have been like, oh, my God, if I really, like, keep my heart true on, like, if I'm really, like, a pure person, then, like, one day I will find gnomes. And, like, what a miserable life I would have led from 7 to 34. Like, that would have been a mistake. That would have been a ongoing mistake that would have been almost 20 years in the making.
Yes, the disillusionment portion of that life would have been a distressing time.
I can't imagine having met you, Dave, and you're just like, hey, you want to grab a drink? I'd be like, no, I'm keeping pure so that I can meet a gnome.
That would have been, either the end or beginning of a beautiful friendship. I don't know which. Because I honestly still feel that way. I may have mentioned to Allison that I would like to craft a tiny table to set out for the gnomes in case they ever need a place to eat. I may have mentioned that.
Okay.
I may have mentioned that sober, which I don't know if that's better or worse, but there it is.
I think that it's take it at face value. I mean, look, you're being considerate. Yeah. No gnome is going to fault you for that.
No, just in case. I mean, the one from Siberia might, because that dude was creepy. Can we talk about these different gnomes? Because it's not it's not just the forest gnomes.
So, I mean, let's talk about the different types.
Should we break down some gnome facts? Because the show
I love gnome facts.
There are, I mean, if you watch the whole first episode, it's
titled Gnome Facts 101. Yeah.
It's not even that. It's a gnome humble brag. Like, just like through and through that, like, you just kind of walk away and you're like, oh, why am I not a gnome? Like, I must be fucking up this life.
Yeah. It's like, it's so educational for a gnome. You know what I mean? Like, it's like presented as if it's like a NOVA documentary or something.
It's
like
science. It is absolutely like, science.
Gnomes are 15 centimeters high and they weigh between 250 and 300 grams. This is important. It talks about body mass. It talks about habitat, how they're distinguished and their lifespan. It even throws in the extra fact that there's one example of a couple that, you know, lived for 550 years. Typically, gnomes live until 400, which we'll pick back up on later. But it was just like for pretty much the whole first episode, it was just laying out this really complex exposition about these gnomes, like it was some sort of like David Attenborough thing, like you had the gnome and his habitat. You know what I mean? It was just sort of like, I don't know. I mean, I loved it, but it, again, like for a child, it's just sort of like, you know, get to the action, ride the fox, save some people, save the creatures of the forest from twigs and
from
briars.
From themselves, apparently. From their stupid selves.
From themselves.
This is
epidemic. They just run into stuff.
Darwinian
constantly.
Evolution at its finest here. Apparently assisted by the gnomes, or stymied by the gnomes. I don't know how you want to put it, but yeah. Sean, I wanted to give you a second though too. I kind of jumped the gun on you. Did you feel like the theme song, just to jump back real quick, do you feel like the theme song prepared you for this show? Maybe not the exposition factor of it, and then like the lesson in gnome history and lore, but did you feel like it prepared you for the show adequately?
I feel like in terms of the tone of the show, this theme song gave you great insight in terms of the tone of what the show was going to be, which was that like it's something that, I mean, like can we, like, first and foremost, can we like all agree, like Alice and David, like gnomes are not real, right? Can we all just state the obvious, like
Sean, in every wish and dream and happy home, the gnomes.
Sean, they live inside you, and I've been meaning to talk to you about that because you need to get that checked.
Well, then they gotta fucking start paying rent. Like, this isn't a free ride.
That's fair.
Well, they might hypnotize you and perform complex surgeries.
That's very true. They might disrobe before they climb inside you and fix that.
Yeah, what the?
Oh, boy.
I can't wait to get into this episode.
Just like he couldn't wait to get into that goat. Oof.
Oh, my God. You know, I think it did a good term. I think it did well. The theme song did well in terms of understanding the thematic tone that the show was going to have.
Sure.
Is that, like, the theme song was very, I don't know, there was kind of like almost like a...
I've described it as wholesome. Like, it's very...
That's exactly the word that I
had. Yeah, it's very... It's very homey. It's very comfortable. It's like cozying up next to a fireplace in like an old stone farmhouse or something like that. You know, it's just very like homey and wholesome.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of hints at a little bit of the fantastical that they get into, being like the trolls, wizards, fairy kings line, and just, you know, a lot of the stuff that like the gnomes talk about are really just kind of like very, you know, that they kind of get into in the couple episodes that I watched. It just seemed like it was very specific values that they have, like this very specific value system, you know. And so, like, I think the understanding is that, like, you know, that we've been joking about is that, like, if your heart is true, and I mean, like, that really kind of is fulfilled throughout this entire series is that, like, David is such a pure soul, like he is such a fantastic person. I mean, he even goes as far to like put his wife Lisa almost like second in terms of what's like happening in his life or his priorities. Like, his main priority is being able to assist others with the fact that he is a gnome doctor.
Yeah, anywhere, anytime. And I love that. I feel like it's not that he puts her second. Yeah, anywhere around the world, Italy, Denmark, wherever he wants to go.
Yeah,
but I love that it seems like they have a great relationship and partnership, because it's not like she's just home tending the house at the base of a tree. She's, you know, on occasion she's called on to go save him.
I'm going to agree to disagree with you on that one. I mean, it felt like there were a lot of times, the second episode is sort of what David is referencing. And so in this episode, David gets trapped by some trolls, and so Lisa comes to save him. But like in the meantime, like she is just really kind of like pacing around the homestead, like doing all these other things. Like I for me, it felt like there were moments with Lisa where it was just a very lonely existence.
Look, I'll give you a little bit there, because at one point she's just like, okay, so these guys, David and Lisa, they talk directly to the viewers, and they know that they're mostly children.
Oh, yeah, they break the fourth wall.
Oh, right through it.
This is like a weird gnome office.
If anyone was confused, this is actually a documentary series.
I think we said it was like the first reality TV show. It just happened to be about gnomes and animated. But yeah, it's basically got that kind of feel to it. But I'll give you that to an extent, because at one point Lisa says, David gets called off on a, he gets a telepathic call, which is strange, but he gets a telepathic call to like go help this young girl in Italy. So he's like, well, I got to go to Italy. I'm gone. And she's like, well, she's talking to the children watching the show now. She says, well, he's probably off on a more interesting adventure. I'm just going to be like sweeping up and making food. So why don't you go follow him?
That was so sad.
No, but honestly, like she had just been talking about like rainwater reclamation and like wrought iron baths and all this stuff and like how the water, and it was like an HGTV show. Like I wanted more about that. It was like I wanted to know more about the specifics of the gnome home, you know?
But I mean, so, like there's only so much that like she can explain about the water table before I'm just like, oh no, like you need to take a cross stitch or like, you need to get a quilting circle together. Like, I will say this, like, in the four episodes, it really only seemed that, like, Lisa interacted with one other gnome in those four episodes. And, like, and that was because, like, that was on the way to the finale. Like, otherwise it was like, but she was, like, at the homestead.
They can converse telepathically, so maybe she's just sitting at home talking to her children silently.
That's so creepy.
That's a super creepy idea.
Or hey man, she might be talking to that gnome bodybuilder out in Venice Beach. You don't know.
Yeah,
that mind palace is an interesting place.
I feel like half the time David, like, I don't know, I mean, like, maybe this is just me as a non-gnome talking, but like if I was like having an argument with somebody, be like, oh my God, I just got a telepathic message from Italy. I got to run out. Sorry. Can we continue this?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Can we table this conversation for later? Like, I would use this gift to get myself out of a situation that I didn't want to be in.
But then your heart would not be pure and you would not be living in the kingdom of the gnomes, my friend.
Dave, I think we have well established that my heart is not pure.
We're trying to bring him along here, listeners.
In any way, shape, or form.
No,
nor will it ever be.
Someday, in 400 years. Perhaps. Oh boy, I love gnome facts though. Like I love the way that they kind of all set them all up, and we'll kind of touch on them as we go through these episodes because they are important to an extent, especially like the age range and things like that.
And,
too.
And you brought up a great fact, and Allison also talked about this mm-hmm. too. That's worth like examining is that gnomes live no longer than 400 years. And I kind of, like, this was one of the questions that I wrote down for the both of you is like, if you could live to 400 years old, like, would you want to?
Oh boy, I'll tell you what, if we had it like the gnomes have it, Allison and I talked about their interesting relationship. So more facts. Yes, gnomes live to roughly an average of exactly 400 years. Some, in rare exceptions, live a little bit older. They only have children once, and when they have those children, they are always twins, which I have questions about as far as the continuity of this show.
Yeah, that's a weird thing.
However, Allison brought up a very interesting point on the sexual liberation of these gnomes and how that comes into play in their daily life, so I don't want to put words in her mouth. I'll let her talk about it.
So it's like, okay, it's time for us to have kids. They have kids, and that's it. And then after that, like, they are just sexually free. They don't have to worry about pregnancy. They don't have to worry about anything. They just can be free. And you can see that even, you know, 300 and some odd years later, that David's still attracted to Lisa. It's still a thing that's going on, you know. He's taking a bath naked in the documentary. He's stripping down before he performs surgery. I mean, he's kind of a free-swinging dude, you know. So
he's basically a hippie. Like he's into like alternative therapies. He loves hypnosis and acupuncture. He just kind of chills out with the animals. He's a little bit into the free love kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, do you feel like there's like weird like gnome key parties? Like,
dude, I'll tell you
like,
what, that finale when that camera panned away and it kind of irised out, I was like, yeah, this just got real interesting.
Sure did. I mean, I'm sure that there's. I'm sure. Hey, look, you can get.
Yeah.
They sleep in a cupboard.
Yes, they do.
In the wall.
I love that.
I'm sure you can get real freaky in that.
But the other question regarding their cone hats, like, yes. Are they born? Is that like part of, is like they're a skeleton, like sort of is like a skull shaped cone that's covered by the felt, or is there?
Yeah, is it like cone heads? Yeah.
They never come off, and the babies had them on their heads too. So I was just sort of curious if this was kind of like part of their anatomy or.
Yeah,
you know.
Look, to the point where when a troll is carrying David around, carrying him, he's carrying him by his hat, and it doesn't fall off. That thing is welded to his skull, or it is just his skull.
No, I think that's a great, Allison. I think it is like it's probably like the shape of their skull.
Yeah,
like they're just. I would assume. I don't know.
So I'm guessing. Okay, never mind. I was going to say gnome coffins, but we clearly learned that that is not a necessary thing. So I will skip over that particular question. They do also mention other like fairy tale kind of creatures that exist, and I think dwarves are mentioned as looking like gnomes, just without the hats.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing, yeah, gnomes just got some like weird mutated cone heads. I'm guessing. Yeah. Strange. It is interesting to see that like the other differences between the different types of gnomes and where they live, though. Like gnomes are just delineated by where you live. If you're in a forest, you're a forest gnome. If you're in a garden, you're a garden gnome. If you're in a house, you know, logic follows through. That Siberian gnome, I don't know if he's going to haunt my dreams. So I don't know if he comes back.
He's catching your soul with his laser eyes.
He has laser eyes. He's so creepy. Like everybody else is just, all the other gnomes are like, they're kind of having fun and they're dancing around. They're causing a little bit of mischief. This Siberian gnome is in like all just like whitewashed clothing, stumbling through a Siberian winter, just looking grizzled as all hell. And then he just stares at the camera and his eyes are just like these glowing coals of fire that just stare right into your soul. And then they just cut away and they go back to David like playing with the house mice. I don't know what that was about, if it ever came back, but it was terrifying. So you want to talk about Swift instead, so I don't have to think about that Siberian gnome?
Yeah, let's get into Swift.
How do you feel about Swift there, buddy?
So, I think Swift was actually, like, it's funny. I mean, I know that they talk about, Allison, I know that from the reading that you had mentioned that, like, nature was really the protagonist mm-hmm. in this show, and that's actually not my takeaway from it. I really honestly thought as a kid watching this show that like Swift was really the protagonist. Like
Dang. Okay.
He's kind of the only person doing anything in this show. Like he is David's main form of transportation.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't really give you like an idea of exactly like where David and Lisa live. And David has like, so I feel weird continuing to say David the gnome and you're
Dave. Yeah, I know. You can just call me Dave. I feel like we've known each other long enough. You can just call me Dave.
Or so, Dave Newman, like Adventure Time.
David Newman is fine.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
So David the gnome has like a lot of interesting forms of transportation. And yes. In the first episode, he really kind of digs into it when he says like, it's pleasant to ride on a pheasant. For the water, ride on an otter. I make a habit to ride on a rabbit. And then he continues going. And like the fourth one in this pattern is geese, but he just like, he doesn't use anything rhyming. He's just like, whenever I'm traveling long distances, it's really cool if I get on the back of a geese. I'm just like, you just bucked the pattern, buddy. Like, and he continues to go on and he talks about like wolves, but it's challenging to understand because the entire time that they're showing a wolf, they're showing Swift.
And so, I didn't understand what that was either.
I feel like we need to come up with some. I feel like David the gnome let us down. We need to come up with some sort of like, you know, I'm a beast. I ride on the geese, or like
that's
you know.
Like yeah. David the gnome's like his upcoming rap career. I feel like that's his.
But yeah, that was confusing about Swift. I noticed that too. That like he's going on about wolves and talking about wolves and all this, and it's just Swift in the snow. And I'm like, are his eyes going bad? Like it's just Swift. It's not a wolf. I mean,
399 years old. Like you have to have some diminished faculties at that point. Like you have to think that like you're not walking around with like 20/20 gnome vision.
Hey, and yet people let him poke around in their goats and pull you know thorns out of badger eyes and all kinds of fun stuff.
I think you've hinted at this a couple times, just about the surgery craziness.
Yeah. I definitely want to get into his surgical.
Please.
particularly, I think the goat was one, possibly the best that we saw, at least the first few episodes. I mean, he repaired a scratched cornea from a badger in another episode, which was pretty amazing. But the goat, I mean, the fact that he hypnotized it and then performed an open surgery on his stomach. And also stripped down beforehand, as you do.
I guess. So as he's doing this, it's kind of just like, I don't know what's about to happen because this goat like swallowed a twisted piece of wire. And then David's just kind of like, well, we got to get that out. And he just starts taking his clothes off. And maybe as a kid, I didn't think that was weird. As an adult, I find that very strange. I didn't quite know what was about to happen, but
well, the
implication is that the more clothes he takes off, the more sterile he is for the surgical environment. But I find that to be sort of
that's suspect.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the more clothes he took off, the sexier this surgery got.
Yeah, now that's a fact. That's a known fact you can take to the gnome bank.
Yeah, you could take that all as a metaphor. You know, he pulls out his scalpel. He goat. You know,
go on. I'm loving this.
Oh, goodness. But apparently, all you have to do is just... he's also, like, I think, Dave, you mentioned, too, that he's into alternative medicine.
Oh,
like
very much so.
Like, acupuncture is a big thing.
It's a science in this
it's
world.
It's a science, according to science.
Yeah, gnome
just
science.
Just to go back to the goat, like, mm-hmm. I want to just be very... I want to be very clear about this. Mm-hmm. All right? Like, the goat... Like, the exposition that they give for this is fantastic. They're like, the goat ate a piece of twisted wire.
Check.
Which, you know, I mean, hey, look, goats eat everything.
Right.
Goats
right.
eat tin cans. Mm-hmm. Goats eat tires. Like, I mean, I can understand a twisted piece of wire. But, like, from my understanding, like, goats have, like, an iron stomach to begin with. Like, they can process anything. You know, that's what goats do. So the farmer didn't have any money to go to a vet. And it also mentions that this goat was the farmer's only goat.
Yeah.
Now, I want to call into question the validity of calling yourself a farmer. I mean, if it's based on the qualifications that you have a barn and one goat, like, you're a shitty farmer.
Well, I mean, you know, maybe it was a hard winter. Maybe he's just starting out to be a farmer and he's not doing real well.
Yeah,
but all the more reason to call in a fairy folk to save your damn goat. I love the fact that, like, gnomes and humans at this point, they're like, they know each other. Like, they're just buddy-buddy. Like, he says the farmer was sitting there waiting there for him with his goat, and he, like, props the door open for him, this little 6-inch-high fellow with a red hat. And he's just like, yeah, come on in and take care of this goat. I love that, because...
And later, you know, David the Gnome lectures a human on the dangers of pesticides.
Yeah.
You know? He's entertained. He just holds him in his hand and is like, a good thought, yeah, good idea. Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, it's weird. I don't quite get the relationship. Yeah, because he's like, David and Lisa, when they talk to us as kids, they're like, hey, you know, keep your heart pure. Don't be like Sean Paul Ellis, and you'll always be able to see us. But meanwhile, there's like, there are human friends, and then there are humans that they don't trust because they kind of like ruin the environment or whatever. So it was interesting just to be like, this shitty farmer with a near dead goat. I got to go pull a shiv. Yeah, shiv. pull a piece of metal out of his gut.
To bring it up, I mean, like, this isn't like a too big to fail situation, like this farmer with his goat. Like, if it's your only goat, like, you're also a farmer. Like, that kind of means you wear multiple hats on a farm. So, like, hey, guess what? You may have to butcher and eat that goat. Like,
it's going
to
happen.
That's kind of how farms work. Like, you have to understand that.
I'm wondering if the gnome network kind of, you know, like, the farmer was ready to just say, fuck it, like, let's just eat the goat. And the gnomes were like, let me call a guy.
I got this acupuncturist and a hypnotist.
I think we can get this worked out.
Trust me. He's going to...
Oh, you gonna eat this goat? Hey, look, hold on. I know a guy who knows the guy. Let me give him a call. We'll get him right down.
He's a little unorthodox. He kind of strips down. Just let him do his thing.
Look, he's gonna hypnotize your goat. That's not a euphemism. Calm down. I'm going to call him right now with my brain.
Done. It's already done.
The worst thing could happen is that the surgery fails. And the goat dies, and the farmer's like, well, I'm where I started.
Yeah, and I eat the goat. Everybody come on over for some goat.
I mean, do you also feel like, I don't know, this is me playing devil's advocate with this. Like, if I was a farmer who didn't necessarily want to pay the money to go to a vet, because vets are expensive.
Yes, I'm aware.
Vets are very expensive. I know you're aware, Dave. Vets are expensive. So, like, if I have, like, sort of, like, a gnome hookup,
I'm
like, ooh, hey, gnomes, like, this is going to be an expensive bill. I might have to eat this goat. And then the gnomes are going to be like, oh, don't worry about it. Like, we'll take
care of it. It's a pro bono case. Yeah,
I feel like I'd bring that pro gnomo.
Boy.
Oh, my God.
Pro gnomo.
Yes. No.
Yes.
I want to see. Oh, we got the.
Yes.
We were saving that one for you, buddy. We are stepping up the production quality on Saturday Morning Cartoon.
For those of us who use the desktop version.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we have 30-year-old sound effects. It's the best.
Oh, no. That, you guys can buy ProNomo t-shirts on our website.
Oh, I wish that was a thing right now. I want to see his, like, late-night infomercial, David the Gnome, his like, lawyer-slash-doctor ProNomo casework.
Oh, my God. He could sell it. He could sell it. I mean, that first episode.
He just hypnotize you. Done.
I'll only represent you if your heart is pure. Oh. You're like, oh, well, I'm kind of a murderer, so
probably
guess I'm out. Yeah. Better call Saul.
Better call that Siberian Saul. Yeah, Siberian Saul. Oh, boy.
Well, that's the other thing, too, that we don't really get a sense of. There's, like, there are baby gnomes,
yes.
And then there are, like, old-ass gnomes, and we don't really see any gnomes. Like, all of them have long white beards and the pointy hats, but none of them have, like, none of them are, like, in their prime, you know? Like, we don't see any gnomes that are, like, of that age. And the ones we do see, like, I don't really get a sense of, like, you know, are they bachelor gnomes? Like, there seem to be a lot of gnomes that are around.
You took the words right out of mouth. Like, do you, Allison, I get the feeling, like, you want to see, like, gnomes peacocking.
Gnome
like,
on
you want to. You want to see, like, gnomes courting and just, like, banging it out.
I don't want to go so far as them banging it out, but I would like to see some cute little gnome courting. I love how they rub their noses together.
Oh, gnome kisses, yeah.
Gnome kisses, you know, and I just kind of want to know how it works. Like, how do they meet other gnomes? Because, like you said, Sean, I think, you know, earlier, they seem really isolated. Like, Lisa doesn't have any friends, you know, and they live in the forest, and they have to ride to Italy to, like, see people. So I want to know.
Well, I mean, in all seriousness, Italy is, like, 2 seconds away from
it's right next door. It's right next door to wherever we are in the heart of Europe.
Italy is just a fox ride to get there.
It ain't nothing but a fox ride.
Fox ride away.
That is a travel brochure right there. God. Man, we are marketing the shit out of this show. I love it. Hey, I'll tell you what, though. Gnome courting is a perfect segue into Rule 34. There is not, thankfully...
God,
I couldn't find anything, which I'm very, very thankful for. I know, surprising, but a pleasant surprise, because the only thing that I found was some, like, really crudely drawn, like, spiral notebook-bound sixth-grader drawings. Like, that was it.
Oh, you found mine? Nice.
Yeah, I found Sean's private stash. His heart is not pure, ladies and gentlemen.
Was it, like, in the same anthropological sort of study that the series itself goes through where they're trying to show you, like, the reproductive system?
That would have been great. Like, the Vitruvian gnome, that would have been amazing, but no one's done that. There's no, like, Da Vinci sketch of the gnome's anatomy, unfortunately, because the internet is not on that yet. But hopefully now they will be, because I'd watch that show. Yeah,
I'd watch that show.
ProNomo. Have we talked about trolls yet? And we've talked about a variety of different animals.
Let's get into these trolls.
Ooh, they're like Pit-Pat-Pot and Holler. Holler's my favorite, I guess. I can't really tell the difference between any of them, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I haven't been able to figure out.
Which is the one that dances?
I feel like that's Pot.
I think it was Pot.
That's Pot.
It's Pot.
Yeah,
it's Pot.
Which makes sense.
Episode 3, David dances with Pot after getting the shining begonia.
Shining begonia.
Oh, boy.
Mm, that's a MacGuffin right there.
Sorry, I'm a little late on the take there, but
it's all good. That's the sound the shining begonia makes.
Yeah.
So, so he tricks Pot into dancing. He teaches him modern dance. And like if you're not a child and you're watching this, you're just like, yeah, he's clearly bullshitting this whole instance. And then he feels the need to, like, look to the camera and he's like, I don't know a single thing about dance. I'm like, I'm aware.
It's like, yeah, we see it.
The closing credits, he's dancing the night away.
Yeah, with Lisa the whole time.
Yeah.
A couple missteps here or there, but he's actually pretty good cutting up a rug.
I feel like gnome dancing is something that happens in, like, the gnome courtship.
It's definitely part of their courtship ritual. Yeah.
That's the gnome peacocking that we're talking about that we're so desperately interested in.
I would like to see a prequel to David the Gnome and, you know, just see him, like, kind of out on the town, riding his fox, picking up ladies. You know.
David the Gnome, origins.
Origin story. I like that. I like that quite a bit.
But also, I thought it was interesting that, like, the trolls, you know, their main thing with the gnomes is that they love putting them in wheels.
Yeah,
like,
I didn't get that.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
Why do you put them in a wheel? Like, it's like a, I don't know.
Like, almost like a fetish. Like, he was just like, oh, I can't wait to get that David strapping my wheel. Then he's just like, he's literally sitting in like a recliner, just spinning a wheel, just like fantasizing that a gnome's going to be attached to it at some point in the near future. Very strange fetish the trolls have. I also like the reveal. So David's talking about these trolls as like these stinky and gross and dangerous creatures that are really, really stupid. And you see them kind of like up close and they look really like menacing and imposing. And then they show one chasing a deer through the forest and he like doesn't even come up to the deer's like knees. Like he's maybe like a 2 foot tall creature. Now to the gnome, yeah, sure, that's huge.
Gnomes are so small.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, to me,
they're like 6 inches.
Yeah, but if you saw that thing and then you just kick it, like there's nothing menacing about it. Like I would just make friends with the gnomes, I would kick the trolls and problem solved. But that's just me.
And then, I love how David the gnome, like everything else, he's very much about, you know, nature and these different animals and all these things, and we need to be respectful. And he's just like, these trolls.
These trolls, though.
And then just puts his hands up to his ears and like blows raspberries at them like at every opportunity. I'm like, oh, it's kind of
good. Yeah, he keeps saying how stupid trolls are and that they'll believe anything you tell them, except he doesn't really tell them anything. He just kind of makes raspberries, like you said, and makes jokes.
Yeah. Well, he dances and he, you know, does all these like elaborate things and yet doesn't just use like simple mind tricks to like. You know.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. So Sean was leading into this one. Sean, why exactly would he be dancing with this troll? Like, what was his end game here? Did he have, you know, something in mind?
Oh, my God, yeah. So if any sunlight, if a troll is exposed to any rays of sunlight, it turns them into stone.
Now, okay, two questions. One, are you sure it's any rays of sunlight? Because we watched this fucking sun take minutes to rise over the horizon, and this idiot was still dancing around. I was just like...
Are you doubting me on my ability to know gnome knowledge?
Gnome facts.
Hey, how much sun does it take turn them to stone? Oh, like, is it one ray, or is it like the entire full sun? Apparently the latter.
Yeah.
My assumption from watching this is that, like, the sun has to be completely, like, visible. Like, the entire sun. Yeah. Not just, like, a part of the sun, but the whole damn sun. And then that, like, immediately turns them into sun.
And let me ask you this. Now, I'm usually a little more sympathetic with the villain's side of things. I mean, say about me what you will with that comment.
Sure, but, you know, you're a villain yourself.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm Dr. Claw MD on Twitter. But if I felt that this was a rather gruesome transition for Pot, I actually kind of felt bad for him. He was dancing around. He was kind of, you know, stupid, but having a good time. Yeah, he was a jerk, and he froze, you know, Swift's feet to the ground, but...
It went on for a while.
I made
the note. Yeah. I wrote down. It looks like he's in like death throes.
Yeah,
like he's like
it was disturbing.
It was unnecessary.
So okay, I'm glad I'm not the only one that felt that way because I almost felt bad for him. And
I was fucked up.
Like, I thought it would just be a very quick like exposed to the sun, turns to stone, whatever. But it was like this really.
Yeah, it was drawn out. Yeah.
They kept showing Pot's hand.
Yeah,
it was like the top, like from his forearm up, and it was like kind of like limp wristed and over, and then it would kind of like shudder and stagger.
It was real creepy, like a death claw coming at you. Yeah, and then just to make sure that all the kids weren't terrified and like running and screaming and crying, David's like, it'll be fine. When the sun goes down, he'll be regular old Pot again, dancing and being stupid. So it's like, okay, I guess that's fine. We're getting a little short on time, so I definitely want to make sure we get to this finale, because it is important. The other three episodes we watched were the first three from the series, and we kind of danced around, cherry-picked different scenes from there. So now we'll talk about the finale, and I'm curious to get your reactions on this one, because according to the internet, this is one of the saddest moments in childhood cartoon history. I can see why. I'm curious to know what your opinions are.
I think what struck me even more than that ending was that the fact that the show is basically just following the twilight of this gnome couple, like their last year on Earth. Like it was designed that way because it says at the very beginning that David is 399 years old and apparently gnomes only live to be 400. So it's not like the show was like, oh, well, let's just go out on this note. Like it was designed to lead to that point. Yeah. And that's just more like just heart wrenching that like, oh my gosh, should we go into like exactly what happened? I mean,
I think we can, because this is something that like, even if we talk about it, like you're going to want to just seek this out, especially if you were a fan of the show as a kid, just to kind of like remind yourself. Cause it was the whole episode is just, it's not like they go along and then boom, it ends. It's not like a sudden thing. Like, this entire last half hour is their goodbye to not only their life, to each other, to their friends, and animal friends and gnome friends alike, to the viewers. But then it's also the kids, you know, you're saying goodbye to the show because the show ends. So it's like, it's just 25 minutes of sadness. But there are some, like, bright levity, you know, there are moments of levity in here. Like Sean mentioned earlier with the toasting and the drinking and the possible gnome orgy. Things like that. Things that kids love.
Yeah. I mean, but there are these moments of incredible stuff. So first of all, I'm just going to say the elephant in the room here is that obviously in the finale, David and Lisa cross over into the next world. Yes. And whatever that means for gnomes, we kind of get a glimpse of that. And so they're preparing for it. It's sort of like, oh, okay, we're almost 400. Our time has come. It's time for us to start preparing for death, essentially. Or as they never call it by that name. They just sort of are moving into the great beyond. But to me, the most heart-wrenching thing was their friend Casper, who was like, hey, can I come along too? I don't want to do this alone.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, my God.
Not only that, but like, so, I mean, so they... Like, they're, oh man, I don't know. Fuck this episode for making me have feelings.
See, like, his heart does have a chance after all.
It is. I mean, I cried.
Oh, buddy.
Like, it was very hard not to. But, you know, they have this very tearful goodbye with everybody that's in the forest and with their mice pets. And so they jump on the back of Swift and then they head to grab Casper before they head to the mountain of beyond.
Yeah, now Casper is a friend of theirs in kind of like the remote Blue Mountains. And
he's the wisest gnome that David knows.
And he, correct me if I'm wrong, but he wrote them a letter a little while back and said, hey, it's about that time, just wanted to come with you.
Hey, we're probably going to die soon, so maybe we can kill two birds with one stone, no pun intended.
But that to me was like the saddest part. Like Allison mentioned, like he's like, I don't really want to do this alone, which is super sad.
So
but
then that was not the saddest.
Exactly.
Part. Can I third wheel on your death walk?
Yes. Yeah. Like that. But that was not the saddest part of the whole.
Surprisingly.
Episode.
Yeah.
Okay. I think Dave, do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, I don't know where you're gonna get to. I'm talking about when they meet up with Casper and his kind of reaction. Okay, go ahead. You take it because we're on the same page.
So they get David and Lisa meet up with Casper and they're having dinner
at his place
with them at his place. And, you know, David has stated he's the wisest gnome. Like your introduction to Casper's hovel is like, he's got all these books stacked all over the place. Like just a lot of gnome knowledge is like all over this room. Like it is a library. And so, Casper makes the comment, he's like, these books have brought me more happiness than anything else in my life. And I was just like, oh no, like you guys are like, oh, like that to me was heart wrenching.
I'm with you because there was a moment, and Allison can attest to this, there was a moment when David like trips over the stacks of books that are in front of this like roaring open fireplace, and I visibly kind of like clenched in on myself and I was like, oh no, the books. Like I was very concerned for these fictional animated books in a 30-year-old television show. So I was very concerned for his books because of Casper's
visceral reaction. He almost jumped off the couch, like trying to like save them, like shove David the gnome aside and like,
no, not the books. Yeah.
I mean, like, but I mean, like, if you think about it though, I mean, like, I guess that, in my mind, Dave, that would be the correct response.
Thank you.
Those books were like Casper's fucking kids.
Yeah, they really were.
Like those were his children. Like he presumably never married.
Right.
He never had his twins,
right.
His twin kids, like, you know, we talked about Lisa being like very, very kind of isolated or lonely. Like, I can't imagine how that must have been for Casper. Like at least at the end of the day, David was coming home to Lisa and be like, you know, what's going on, you know, with your gnome life, you know, with Casper, it was just like, he was completely, it felt like he was completely shut off from the rest of like the gnoming world,
except for his telepathy. So I guess there's a little glimmer of, you know.
I'm going to be honest though. Like, I wonder how often I did not feel like from the episodes that we watched that, like, other than like in a dire state of emergency,
right.
I don't feel like people used gnome telepathy to be like, hey, what's going on?
How's the weather over there?
What are you thinking about today? Like, what's going on in your neck of the woods? Like, I don't feel like that was, it didn't seem like an emergency network only.
Like,
yeah, like a 911 call. Right?
Lines, keep the lines clear right. in case a goat swallows a briar.
Guys, a badger poked his eye. Yeah. Like, we got to get on it.
And so, yeah, I mean, oh, Casper. Yeah, it was just, but also I thought it was sad that they just left Swift outside, too, in the freezing cold. They was like, BRB, we're just going to go.
Oh, dude, they ride this poor fox. I mean, he's taken them everywhere throughout, at least, let's just say, at least their last year of their lives. And he's just kind of like, hey, let's go on this incredibly long journey through these, like, frozen peaks and deep snowdrifts and the scalding desert.
Especially at the point as they are going over these, like, the frozen yeah. area yeah. that's before the Mountain of Beyond.
And he's like, pick
at
it
one
up.
At one point, like, Swift kind of, like, stumbles for yeah. a second. And Dave is just like, hey. Get your shit together.
Yeah, he's like, pick it up, fucker. We got places to be.
Get your shit together. I gotta go die.
And like, that's like, Jesus, all right, like, God, just give me a break.
Calm it down.
But I thought that was bad, too, when Swift, like, doesn't really get a good eye, and then he, like, turns around and is, like, crawling over this ridge to see where they've gone and just
that,
transform. And
see, now, that was the moment to me. Sorry,
that was
sorry,
the moment
I
that melted me.
Well, I was going to say that was the moment to me that I can see Sean's point of view, seeing Swift as kind of like he inherits the story at this point because we see a transition through Swift. So why don't you guys talk about kind of like what happens to David and Lisa and Casper? And well, we see this through Swift's eyes. Like at first, it seems like we're not going to see it at all. We're not going to be privy to that magical end of things. But then we see
okay.
it. Yeah,
because I want to say. Like, you know, for however long this episode was, like, this all occurs, like, at the, like, you know, like, this final moment of them ascending happens, like, you know, very, very quickly and in, like, the very final moments of this episode. And there are, like, two specific things that happen. And it kind of, like, one of these moments kind of made me, like, I was very emotional. And then one moment kind of made me turn my head and be like, what the
yeah.
fuck? And so you get Lisa and David, mm-hmm. they kind of form into, it looked like a,
I think they were cherry trees.
Yeah. It looked like a cherry tree. Yeah. It looked like two intertwined cherry trees, like beautiful, mm-hmm. you know, but you don't really see the transition. It's all of a sudden, like at one point Casper just goes like, it's time. And David's like, yeah, I fucking know it.
Yeah.
And then
let's do this.
Yeah. And then they just turn into these two inner, like Lisa and David turn into these two intertwined trees.
Right.
Now, Swift is like kind of peeking over the top of this like ridge looking at them. And then this is the moment that kind of like caused me to tilt my head a little bit is that you see the transition that Casper goes through.
Right.
I don't know how to describe it. Like, it looked like he was getting abducted by an alien.
Yes, he turns like this electric blue and kind of like, he kind of phases out and it's like a blue kind of electric silhouette that replaces him. And then he just turns into
a tree.
But what didn't bother me about that is that there are a couple other cartoons sort of from that same era, like the animated version of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, where they use that same effect when things are being transformed from, like, say, from stone back to life or whatever, like, you know.
Mm.
So I had sort of seen it a couple other places, so I saw it. It was familiar, but I couldn't quite place it at first. So right. I was just like, oh, yeah, I mean, naturally he turns into, like, a shining blue object and then becomes a tree, like, you know. So.
That's how no magic works, Sean. Just get it together. I honestly thought the moment that made you question this show was what happens to Swift afterwards.
Yeah, this is my favorite part because this guy's dangerously sexy.
Oh boy.
Oh man.
Do we want to tease the viewers with that, or I think we should at least mention
the spinoff.
Yes, because it is tied into the spinoff. Did you know that?
Yeah. So I mean, like Swift is like. You know, Swift is upset. Like he's lost like his best friend.
And that Casper guy, who sure he seemed nice.
Yeah, and so like he kind of ascends down and he kind of heads back towards the forest, and he runs into who? Allison, I think you said it. He runs into Christopher the Gnome.
Well, he runs into a lady fox.
Well, he runs, well, like...
No, because she has eyelashes. That's how you know.
That's how you know she's a lady.
He runs into Agnes the fox.
Agnes, yeah.
And she is being, on her back is Christopher the gnome. Mm-hmm. And, like, man, you can see the sweet, sweet fox chemistry between those two almost instantaneously.
Guess what? If you can't, then... Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, you got it.
Like, you know, they kind of eye each other up, you know, because
it's
like incredibly emotionally devastating experience. Several seconds later, he's walking out of the woods. He checks this lady fox out and he's like, you know, hey, girl. And then like, that's pretty much all that like happened. And then Christopher the gnome is just like, tells his fox, you know, he's like, Agnes, he's like, you know what? I think he'd be a great match for you. You two should totally get together. And like, that's just it.
Get
like,
married. It wasn't even get together. It was like, you should definitely get married.
Like an arranged marriage happened like seconds after, you know, it's all very sudden and serious.
And they're like, both in on it. They're fine with it. They're like, yeah, it's going to happen.
That must be how foxes, you know, they don't court. They just kind of, you know.
They just get pushed together by gnomes until they make little baby foxes.
Yeah, the gnomes are really running the show. Here.
They really are. They're keeping the forest together. So
gnomes are
that.
Really like the forest's matchmakers. Like they're like forest Tinder.
Yeah, see, they're like Tinder, Tinder, like actual they're like, Tinder.
Should, they're like you should. Oh.
There we go. Only you can prevent forest. Yes, thank you very much.
Swipe right on that fox. Ooh, that's boy. Sweet, sweet fox.
Now here, I put myself in Fox's shoes, for lack of a better term. So
please do.
Okay, so he just sees. Put yourself in Swift's, you know, mind.
The best segue. I put myself in Fox. You realize foxes don't wear shoes, right?
Yeah, no.
Okay,
I'm trying to keep it together. I put myself in Swift's point of view. He spent God knows how many years with David roaming around, being his transport, being his best friend, ally, savior, all that stuff.
Being his Uber.
That's his life. You know, he's dedicated to these guys. He's devoted to David and Lisa and helping all the other, you know, forest creatures and gnomes. He just watched them turn into trees, disappear forever from his life, basically. He is a fox without a job with these spinoff series, The Wisdom of the Gnomes, if I've got that right. So there is kind of a continuation. I haven't watched that series. I don't know too much about it. I don't know if Swift kind of carries on through there. I'd imagine he does because he's probably the most popular character from the show for little kids. But that was kind of a nice ending and a nice way to kind of spin off into more Swift and gnome adventures. With that, as far as this show, I would like to say Schlitzweiz to our listeners out there. We had to get that in there at some point. Schlitzweiz. Yep. Which is the only gnomish word we're allowed to know. Schlitzweiz. I have no idea what it means. Could be swearing at you right now. But I think it just means, like, thanks for coming. Thanks for listening. Have a good time. Do you guys really recommend this one? Yeah.
I thought it meant, like, get the fuck out of my house.
I don't think it does, but it's possible that it does. Yeah. Do you guys recommend this one?
Oh, definitely.
Nice. I would say seek this one out. I mean, Sean, I don't know how you feel, but, like, watching this again, I have good memories of this as a kid. And they kind of hold up in a different way. Like, I still think it's a very wholesome show. It's very different from anything we've watched on this show so far. So I still like it. I think it holds up.
It's indoctrinating utopian socialism because it's essentially like from each according to his ability to each according to his need. Like, you've got Swift and David and Lisa and everything. Like, Sean, I mean, you put it really beautifully as far as like the giving nature of everything, you know? I mean, I think it's sort of a timeless theme.
That's exactly what I thought when I was a 4 or 5 year old watching this was, oh, this is just exactly like utopian socialism, which is what I crave.
The world of the gnome.
Yeah. So Sean, what about you? What say you?
I'm like a maybe.
Really?
Side.
Okay.
Yeah.
Even with Swift.
You know, I'd say seek out, I mean, cause I have very fond memories of watching this as well. I don't remember the heavy handedness, nor did I really like super appreciate it. Like I felt like there were times in that first episode where I felt like David was kind of talking down to me and I was like, you know, look, you're an imaginary, you're an imaginary thing that I can buy at a Home Depot. You shut the fuck up.
Ooh.
I kind of got a little, oh, sorry, Allison.
That was a challenging David the gnome. I mean, do you hate the Lorax too?
Well, she probably does actually. he very well might.
That makes total sense for me. So I wouldn't put it past me. I'm going to Google Lorax. I know it's a Dr. Seuss thing, but I don't remember what it looks like.
Oh,
so
buddy.
I guarantee I hate it. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know what I wanted from this cartoon as I was rewatching it. Like, I kind of wanted, like, adventure, and I kind of wanted something. And I feel like for the first episode, like, just the kind of, you know, this, like, it was interesting to rewatch it and just be like, this is sort of a documentary. Yeah. And I appreciated that. And, like, I would say watch the first episode and see, like, if the tone of it is something that you're interested in. I would say definitely watch the final episode. Right. Like, man, what a gut-wrenching, you know, thing to see as a child. Like, I know.
Yeah, I'd say watch a few episodes, get to know the characters, and then watch the finale so you have a little bit of, like, emotional investment. Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm a 50-50. I'm going to take it or leave it on this one. Okay. Like, if you're not in love with it after this conversation, like, don't worry about it. You know, we'll watch other bad cartoons.
I'm going to buy Sean the complete series on DVD for Christmas and see if we can grow his heart three sizes this year. I would like to say a very, very warm welcome and thank you very much to our special guest, Allison Keene, for joining us on this episode.
Yes, thank you
and, for having me.
And now that it is time for plugs, I'm, of course, going to turn it over to our guest, who's going to let you know where you can find her writing and where you can find her on social media. And take it away, Allison.
Sure. Well, the easiest thing is just to find me on Twitter. My handle is Keene TV, KeeneTV. And there's a link on there to my various writing. I tend to do stuff for Hollywood Reporter and Collider, and I just review just everything. My life is TV, and I love it. So hopefully I get to talk to some of y'all, and this has been really fun. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. This has been great. Thank you.
And we didn't talk about, like, terrible things blowing up and just, like, just awful, awful stuff. So this is probably one of the best the best shows to appear on, so well, well planned. Sean, what do you have coming up over the next few weeks in the holiday season?
Oof. Oh, man. December 20th at 10 p.m., I'll be performing as a part of Washington Improv Theater. You can buy tickets on witdc.org. This will be the final show for the end of the year December seasonal disorder run. There'll be more shows if you're in the DC area in January and February. But the big news is in February, February 20th, I'll be performing in San Diego as a part of the San Diego Improv Festival.
Very nice.
It'll be on the 20th, February the 20th, 2015. And you can find more about that as they announce the locations and schedule. And that'll be sdimprovfestival.com.
That's awesome, man. Glad to hear it. Congratulations.
Yeah, no, super pumped. We just found out about it.
Yeah, so. Well, where can the folks keep up with you when you find out things like that on social media?
You can find this stuff on my Instagram, at Sean Paul Ellis, and Twitter, at Sean Paul Ellis as well. And if you are interested, every Friday on Twitter, I participate in something called Irrational Fear Friday. So if you have random irrational fears and you'd like to talk to me about them on Friday, I would love to listen and have a conversation with you about them.
Excellent. And if you're looking to find out what I'm up to these days, you can follow me at Dr. Claw MD on Twitter. Right now, all the TV shows that I cover over at Collider.com, like Gotham, The Flash, Arrow, The Walking Dead, and Constantine, happen to be on a winter break. We're going to have a lot of, like, holiday content, a lot of top 10 lists, and a lot of fun stuff over the next couple of weeks. So definitely head over to Collider.com and check that out. As for this particular show, if you would like to know more about it, you can head on over to our website, SaturdayMorningCartoons.com. Remember, that's morning with a U. Guess what, guys? If you're in the giving spirit this holiday season, we now have a donation button. That's right, a donation button. You can click on that and just give us all your, hard-earned winnings from your day job and just give it to us, and we'll find some fun stuff to do with it. Like, I don't know, maybe make David the Gnome infomercials or Pronomo t-shirts or some other fun stuff.
Yeah, I love it.
Whatever you want. You can also find us on Tumblr at SaturdayMorningCartoons.tumblr.com. Our Twitter handle is at MorningTunes. Again, that's morning with a U. You can also send us an email, your suggestions, your thoughts, your tips and tricks, and whatever you want. Just send send an email and say hi at SaturdayMorningCartoons@gmail.com. And as always, each and every week, you can listen to this podcast and our mini podcasts through iTunes or Stitcher. Sean, did you have anything else you wanted to add to our shout outs and contact
us? One more shout out. Yeah. We recently received a message from a listener via YouTube at The Interwebs Master. and they had mentioned a show that was called UBOS, Ultimate Book of Spells. We just want to say thank you so much for listening, as well as also a suggestion. We have now added that show to the list of things that we plan on watching. Heck so yeah. You are wonderful. If you have any other suggestions, please feel free to email us or contact us. We love going through these shows as much as you do, so we really appreciate the suggestions. That's awesome.
Yeah, and then there's stuff like last week we had Spiral Zone, which Sean and I hadn't even heard about. So we love finding these new things that are just like, we can't wait to get into.
Do we really love
it? Oh, we love the theory and the idea of it, and then we get to the practice of it. But it's good stuff. Now, since, dear listeners, we have a little bit of, not really sad news, but just some news, scheduling news for you. We are going to be taking a Christmas break, so this will be the last podcast of the calendar year 2014.
Yay!
So yeah, take some time off, get caught up on some old episodes, and let us know how we're doing. At the same time, have some great news for 2015. Sean, would you like to do the honors? Let them know what's coming in January.
Oh God, January is such an exciting month for us, because we have decided that we are going to dedicate all of that month to watching a particular type of cartoons. And so I believe it will be starting January 3rd.
Correct.
We will be returning from our Christmas break, and the entire month of January, we are going to be talking about Nicktoons.
Yeah, buddy, the original Nicktoons.
Oh, my God. The original Nicktoons. So we are going, and as well as also two additional Nicktoons that were not a part of the original three.
Right.
So if you're curious, the original three were Rugrats, Doug, and Ren and Stimpy.
Right.
We are also going to be involving Rocko's Modern Life and Real Monsters.
Oh boy.
Which these are five of some of my favorite shows that I remember watching, so I'm very excited.
And who knows, if we treat it right, maybe Allison Keene will come back and join us for one of those shows as well.
We would love that.
I just may.
Love to have you. All right, that's going to do it for us tonight and for 2014. So from Saturday Morning Cartoons, have a safe and happy holiday, safe and happy new year. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you in 2015.